am Hannah.
Hi, I'm Rochelle, and welcome to Monaco.
So before we get into today's Grand Prix, I do want to go over a few personal things that happened to me this weekend because it's car related. So on Friday night, I went on a date with a guy who works at Bridgestone Tires, like as a sales account manager.
So he probably knows a lot about tires.
Yes, exactly. And I know we've been wanting to do a tire strategy episode, so I was going to ask him a bunch of questions about tires. But then literally I get there and 1 minute in, he's like, it's kind of ironic I work for a tire company because I don't know anything about tires.
Why would you ever admit that?
Yeah, so he said he doesn't know anything about tires. And I'm just thinking to myself, how do I leave this date immediately, even though it's only been 5 minutes, but he's not going to be of use in any way whatsoever. But then he proceeds to tell me that he just bought a Maserati. So then I think I should stay. And right. Then we chat and he tells me that I can drive his Maserati on our next date.
That's like a really good testing set.
And I was kind of excited about it.
Yeah.
Like, that's really cool. Like, when else am I going to test drive a Maserati? I should definitely go on this next date. And so we set a plan. And then I was like really happy about it. And I called our friend Jessica in Salt Lake. And she laughed. And she was like, you could literally go to a Maserati dealership if you want to test drive a Maserati. And I was like, okay, whatever. Like, you don't understand me. But I think...
wait, I have a question. What does he have any personality traits other than the Maserati?
No. No, not really. We just talked about how he drives his Maserati to Whole Foods and people look at him. And then he also...
What color is his Maserati?
So the Maserati's black and it has a red interior.
Interesting. And a little douchey.
And he was like bragging about how he went to the Maserati dealership and they were like, oh, like, did your dad send you here? Like, where's your dad? He claimed he brought a backpack full of cash and dumped it on the dealer's desk.
I see.
And was like, that's a joke, right?
I mean, do tire salesmen make their commission exclusively in cash?
No, but I don't know. So I was like, sure, whatever. I didn't question it. I was just like, I don't care. I want to drive a Maserati. Because I was like, also, we went to a German beer garden and I got a giant stein of beer. So I was drunk.
You got on a stein, like a draft.
Yeah. Right?
You got it on draft.
Okay, yeah, on draft. Because he wanted to order a bottle of beer. And I was like, you have to get a stein on draft, idiot. So then,
really, the Maserati is the only thing going for
that's
him.
What I'm trying to tell you. Like, he had no taste, culture, or humor, or anything else going for him other than me being able to drive this Maserati, which I was
excited. He's Mater, who's picked up a Maserati.
Exactly. So I was, like, pretty excited about it, though, because I'm like, wow, how unique. And then... I woke up the next morning. The alcohol had worn off. Mm-hmm. It suddenly hit me what the reality of this situation is. Because I was just thinking, like, when I woke up, like, when were we just talking about Maseratis? Like, Maserati. Something about Maseratis had come up in the past week. And then it hit me like a brick. I was like...
I'm glad we got here. Thank God.
Yeah, it was a self-realization moment. And I realized... A Maserati is a poor man's Ferrari. And I was like, oh, God. And the other terms that it was described in by our friends in Salt Lake, it's the Michael...
I'm sorry. Our car experts who live in Utah.
Right. Our car expert friends in Salt Lake City described Maseratis as... the Kia of the luxury the Kia of luxury sports cars, as well as the Michael Kors of high fashion. And I was like, why do I even want to test drive a Maserati? I'd just rather not.
No. So instead, what'd you do?
Nothing.
No. You bought a Mercedes.
Oh, yes. This whole thing just inspired me to buy a Mercedes the next day. Yeah, so I was like, because, you know, I've been thinking about buying a Mercedes because I'm so inspired by Toto and Lewis. But after meeting this man who drives a knockoff Ferrari, I was like, also, I looked up the prices of Maseratis. So they retail for $80,000 and he bought it used, which you could get like a nice used Maserati for $50,000.
Well, so if Maserati is a poor man's Ferrari, what's a used Maserati?
Literally anyone can buy a Maserati. It's not exclusive. Any average Joe can buy a Maserati. So I'm just like, that's really lame. And I realize, you know, if I can buy a Maserati, I can certainly go buy a Mercedes today. So then I went to go buy a Mercedes. But one useful thing that came out of my conversation with the guy, because I was talking about how I want to buy a Mercedes SUV because I need the height and suspension of an SUV to clear the Philly potholes that are like pretty deep. Right. And I was saying, though, Mercedes, as well as like pretty much every other car, like luxury car brand, they're making their SUVs curved like eggs. And I do not like that look, but we were talking about it and he said it's actually because it's more aerodynamic, which improves fuel efficiency.
Whoa.
Yeah.
So he does know something. Thank God.
That's the only thing I learned.
Well, that's useful. Now you know why they're eggs.
Yeah. And so that makes sense because obviously fuel efficiency is like way more of like a modern concern. But I still can't really align with that in terms of like my personality. Like I can't, I can't drive an egg around. It's just not me. So I compromised.
Got it. Yeah. You got the boxy egg.
Yeah, like, it's not a G-Wagon, it's not a straight-up box, but it's not an egg, it's a boxy egg.
Got it.
That was my weekend.
I'm glad you remember the Maserati thing, because I was a little concerned. If he had a Ferrari, that would be a different situation.
Oh my gosh. Well, this is the thing, because he did text me, like, that night, like, after our date, and was like, had a great time, blah, 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 and, you know, I also responded with generics, but I think he is going to follow up with me, like, in the next week about... We made pretty extensive plans for like next Saturday. And so I assume he's going to want to like confirm. And I'll just have to say, because I don't believe in ghosting.
Right.
I'm not sure how much I can say, because what I really want to say is I think you're a great person, because really he is. Like, I think he is going to make some girl happy someday, but it's not going to be me. It's because my standard, it's not me.
Yeah, it's not you, it's me. Got it.
I need a Ferrari. You're a fucking Maserati.
Can I make a suggestion? Yes. I think like a two birds with one stone sort of thing. Instead of texting this to him, I think you should just send him the link to this podcast. And then this is 11 minutes in, which is when it counts as a statistic. So he will hear it and we get the metric. So it's double whammy. Yeah, totally.
Agreed. Alrighty, will do.
By the way, if anyone out there needs to break up with someone or end a friendship or anything, we're happy to do it for you. We'll put it around in the middle of our episode so that we can get the stat and you can get it over with without having to do it yourself.
It's the best win-win you could ask for.
Win-win with Box Box.
Yes. Oh, I like that. Okay. Alrighty. Well, that was my weekend.
Yay, on to the weekend we're all talking about, other than Hannah's, which we now will be. Yes. Monaco.
Woohoo!
And like all of our Grand Prix weekends, we're going to start with the digital roundup. Doop, yep. Doop. So there wasn't much in the digital space, but since I watched it online, I'm counting this as digital
yes.
content. I watched the press conferences, and I wanted to talk about a couple of moments that really stood out to me or that were just funny. So Max and Vettel were paired up together. He was asked what advice he'd give to Max to beat Lewis, and he said, none. I never succeeded, so why would he take advice from me? Follow-up was, what do you make of their battle so far? And he said, I have no idea. I was way too far back to see anything.
I mean, that's the truth.
It is, but that was all gonna change. He manifested it, I think,
right.
Negatively. Negative manifestation right. is a thing, right? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
so that changed for Seb, but that's a cliffhanger. You're gonna have to wait and hear the end of... The other funny press conference that I enjoyed was between Kimi and Lando. And Lando was asked what the biggest difference between Carlos and Daniel was as teammates. Lando literally laughs, like full lol, and goes, this is a tricky question, but actually not really. As a person or as a driver? And then he decides to say their age, because Daniel is quite old. Whilst he's sitting next to a 41-year-old driver.
Because Daniel's like in his early 30s, right?
Daniel is exactly a decade younger than Kimi. He's 31.
Yeah, 31.
Yeah, and Kimi's
41. Thought of her. Daniel's yeah. quite old, so Kimi's ancient.
Ancient. If Kimi was hurt by this comment, he reacted in the same way as he would if he wasn't hurt, which is
stoically
blinking. Yes. but then Lando decides to elaborate. Or actually, the moderator interrupts him. He says, could we just focus on their driving? And he's like, cool, cool. So Carlos is much better at driving a car that's not very nice to drive. He's really good at adapting. And like Daniel's fast, but he needs to have a car that suits him. Mm-hmm. And then he was like, I think that's just something some drivers have more than others. It's a confidence thing. And then goes, but wait, don't want to say too much. And it's like a little too late.
Yes, that was a lot to say. That's gotta hurt.
Gotta hurt, because then in Daniel's press conference, he was very diplomatic. But like, I do kind of like to see this like confidence building up in Lando. Like, he's doing well. He knows he's doing well. He's performing consistently. And now he's growing a pair.
Sounds like a great press conference.
Yeah, and also, he also manifested it because this, like, translated.
Daniel sucked. So, to give some context for this Grand Prix in Monaco, we're in the fourth race of the season. Before Monaco started, Mercedes and Hamilton were leading in the team and individual constructor standings. Not by that much, though. Red Bull and Max Verstappen have been vying with Mercedes and Hamilton for the first spot, and they've been like pretty close, but Mercedes and Hamilton have pretty much been in the lead this whole for the last three races. And then there's also been a pretty close battle for third and fourth between Ferrari and McLaren.
Okay, so this track is interesting aesthetically. It's a city track, so you go through the streets of Monaco, and it's very, very narrow. It has a lot of very famous turns, so like Casino Square and the Hotel de Paris, which is just pretty. There's like a lot of fun pictures on Instagram of cars zooming by like this famous hotel. Then there's the tunnel, which is just like a cool addition that I don't think any other track has. No one has a tunnel. And then there's the chicane, which I think exists on other tracks, but this one in particular is like a serpentine type of sequence of corners, which is very complicated. It's the best place to overtake, but it's also a difficult thing to navigate. And then there's the pool, which everyone kept mentioning. I never physically saw this pool, but supposedly around one of the turns, I think 13 or 14, there is a pool. But they mention the pool a lot. It's a 78 track because it's, I think it's only 2 miles, this track. Yeah, so it's 78 short. Laps. And so a lot of drivers don't like it. I think Lewis at one point said that this is not a racing track necessarily, which maybe he would have had a different attitude. If he had a different attitude, he would have done a little better. But, you know. Mm-hmm. But, yes, it definitely tests, like, other skills and abilities that drivers have, like precision and car control and turns and tire strategy, like, all of that stuff. And same within track limits. Track limits is a huge thing here. But that's because, unlike in other places where there's, like, this ambiguity about whether you're outside or inside track limits, this is a very narrow track, so it's very easy to get off track limits. So, like, it's not like they're confused as to where the track limits are. It's more like controlling the car enough to not sway off.
Also, as we've talked about previously, Monaco is known for its glory, glamour, prestige, and usually there's a ton of A-list celebrities. Like, in the past, at least athletes wise, they got Tom Brady and also his wife, Giselle, and then, like, Kris Jenner, Hugh Grant, Gigi. So, a lot of great people. This year, we only saw two celebs, and it was Serena Williams and Tom Holland, which I assume everyone knows Serena Williams is, like, the tennis star of the world. But if you don't know who Tom Holland is, he's Spider-Man.
The new one, yeah.
Yeah, so those were our celeb sightings, which was pretty disappointing. And also, we will get into Serena later because she was given the duty to wave the checkered flag at the end and had an impromptu interview, which we will cover. So, to give a summary of the Grand Prix today, Rochelle will do her race recap, but we are switching up the format mainly to make it under 2 minutes. So I'm going to time it, and Rochelle's going to do her best to give a quick summary.
Yep.
Alrighty, ready, go.
Okay, so basically in free practice, it was kind of boring. The only thing that happened was that Schumacher couldn't compete because his chassis broke. And so he couldn't compete in qualifying. So it was just Mazepin representing Haas, which, woof. But anyway, no one cares about him. And so then Charles was second fastest in Q1 because he's so amped up to be home. But everyone was struggling with their tires. They couldn't get grip with them. But it was a little confusing because the weather's good and the track is like a road. So I don't understand why people are struggling. But people are struggling. And the only people that seem to be doing well is a Ferrari. Anyway, so Vettel makes it into Q2 by 10th of a second. So this is where we see him improving. Hamilton finishes in 7th, which is weird because he lives here and he should probably know these streets. Charles is doing super well. He's in pole position. And in the last 18 seconds, he crashes his car. He hits the wall a little, then that swerves him over some bumps, and then he rams into the side of the road and, like, pfft, disaster. Everyone is pissed off because there's only 18 seconds left, so there's no time to finish the lap. So everyone's times get canceled, and so Charles automatically makes pole position, which is, like, a drama because there was people in the past, Schumacher, who did this on purpose. But the issue is that there's a lot of damage with Charles's car, so there could be damage with the gearbox. But Ferrari tells us that there's no damage with the gearbox and everything is fine. And so anyway, the quality results are Charles, Max, Valtteri, Carlos, Lando, Gasly, and Lewis. The next day, we continue the saga, and Ferrari announces yet again that the gearbox is fine. And then, right before the start of the race, they're like, JK, the car is undrivable. And so poor, poor, poor Charles can't even compete in his own hometown race. He has to stand there for the national anthem, sit in the garage the entire time. And anyway, poor Charles. We're very mad. We were livid. We were fuming. We were beside ourselves. Fuck Ferrari and fuck Mattia. We love Charles, except we don't love that the guy, the announcer, kept saying despair for Leclerc because that's just a terrible rhyme. He said it like 15 times. He could have come up with better rhymes. Anyway, positions don't shift. Everyone's on softs. DRS is not useful here. No one can really overtake. There's like one overtake. Okay, so Hamilton pits first and he has like a 2.6 second pit because Mercedes loves Hamilton, and then Bottas pits and he gets the D squad because no one likes Bottas at Mercedes apparently, and they can't get one of his wheels off, and so he's out because they couldn't remove a wheel, and he was in second at this point. So this is Charles and Bottas out for no, like, fault of their own. Anyway, so Lando laps Daniel Ricciardo in lap 53, which is a big deal because who wants to be lapped by their teammate? And he waves at him, but is it nice or is it just, like, mean? We don't know. Hamilton's in position 7 and he's trying to get past Gasly and he's really pissed that he's behind Gasly. And then at some point he just gives up and he's like, why am I in this race? Max Verstappen wins and Carlos gets 2nd and Lando gets 3rd because they're amazing and it's a beautiful podium. And there was a Dutch party for Max and they fist bumped the prince and now they're going to dinner with him.
The end. That was pretty good. On to analysis. I just want to make it clear. So people, because Michael Schumacher in 2006 was driving a Ferrari and allegedly deliberately crashed to stop quali to secure his pole position. And so it is kind of a coincidence that essentially the same situation happened with Leclerc, except I really don't think he did that on purpose. Leclerc, like, legit crashed into the wall, damaged, like, the right side of his car, and it was, like, a red flag, really bad situation. When the race was, like, about 30 minutes to start, I guess Leclerc had to do, I don't know what it's called. I don't think it's the formation lap, but some sort of test lap where he drove the car, and he thought it was the gearbox that was the problem. We still don't know at this time, like Sunday night, like exactly what the issue is, but we do know there was definitely an issue with the left drive shaft. Charles's car actually crashed on the right side, but people are guessing that even though the left side wasn't hit, the crash was so bad on the right side, there must have been like a shock transfer or something, because the car is like really intricate and like actually pretty like fragile in terms of like its mechanics, and it's such like a small vehicle that it's not unrealistic that the left side would be affected in some way. But then Mattia comes out and he's like, no, it's on the left side, it has nothing to do with the crash from yesterday.
Like, okay, Mattia,
like Charles had pole position, but if he had to change his gearbox due to damage, then he would have started at like P5 or 6. They didn't want to lose pole position, so they decided to go with the gearbox because they said they checked it and it seemed fine.
This is like, I feel like what they did is they found someone like me and they're like, hey, can you check the gearbox? And I'm like, yup.
Yeah.
Looks good. Looks
good.
And then they're like, cool, let's make the press release. And in reality, I understand what they were doing. Like, I've heard some people say that it was a good thing. Like, what else would you do? Like, why would you agree to start 6th in Monaco? But why would you agree to the possibility of not starting at all?
Yeah, like, I think to their credit, they didn't have that much time actually to check everything that they would have wanted to. Like, they only had like a limited amount of time and like ability. So on that front, like, that was a little out of their control. But then also, it was just like a high reward, high risk situation where it's like, okay, well, given that Monaco barely has any overtakes, I think that exacerbated the situation that really made them go towards keeping pole position.
Not starting at all is like the worst possible thing. None of them would ever choose not to start at all.
Yeah. So basically the whole world wept for Charles.
Literally. Like, it was the most, and they kept zooming to him and no one wanted to see his face. Like, it was just all you could see. He was wearing the mask and all you could see his eyes, and he has the most heartbreaking eyes I think I've ever seen in my life. I legit teared up.
Yeah.
Cause he's home. I would just like to say that the Ferrari team has like a reputation for being god awful. Like, all of their radio communication, there's like one where Vettel is literally, they give him some advice and he's like, that is incorrect strategy. This is what I actually am supposed to do.
Good for Vettel, because Ferrari is infuriating.
Yes. Like, everything they respond to on the radio is like checking, even though there's nothing to check. Like, nothing. A gearbox would be great to check. But that they didn't check it.
They're idiots. Okay. Okay, I think we should move off from Ferrari. So the other tragedy in Monaco was, so Bottas actually was super impressive this weekend, like in quali, and then in the race he was in P2 and went in for a pit stop. Nothing crazy, just change in tires. And the pit crew could not get one of his tires off. I shit you not. How do you not remove a tire?
Just a tire change.
How do you not remove a tire?
They said something about the axle. Like, I think it was stuck on the axle. But then I was talking about this with my dad, and they're like, why didn't they just, like, saw it off and put a new one on? Well, if it wasn't coming off.
Well, they did probably do that, but that wasn't a pit stop.
Yeah, at that point, he fell into, like, P19.
Yeah, no, it took so long for them to, like, try to take the tire off that his car just retired. Like, that's pathetic. That's pathetic.
It's, like, everyone who listens knows that Bottas is not our number one choice for anything. But I would personally love to see him fail on his own accord rather than being dragged down by, like, incompetence of other people.
And it just is like, this pit crew shouldn't be bad because they literally just did Hamilton's pit stop like minutes before in like 2.6 seconds. And then Bottas rolls through and they suddenly forget how to take off a tire. It's unbelievable. Like, this is a top notch, like Mercedes as a whole is a top notch team. It's not excusable to have a pit crew that sucks.
No. And by the way, they must have, like, again, the D-list, like, crew that comes in and does Bottas's pit stops. Because Hamilton somehow always comes off the hitch. He's, like, 2.2 seconds in and out. Bottas never has, like a smooth pit stop.
Yeah, he always gets screwed over by the Mercedes pit crew, and it's getting really old, because I agree, like, you never want any driver to lose on these kind of tiny technicalities.
Yes.
That's just and, lame.
Like, it could be a car issue where just, like, I don't know, maybe this is, like, a common, no one sounded like they'd ever heard of this before, and Bottas is like,
make any sense.
Yeah. No, people rarely retire on a pit stop.
Right.
Right?
Right.
So that's just depressing for poor Bottas. Like, we want justice for Bottas.
The other Mercedes driver, if you recall, is Lewis Hamilton, but he was MIA this entire weekend in P7. He just did not care. He completely lost interest in the whole race. He even wanted to check in on what Bottas was up to. They were like, he's done.
It's like, guys, what's the gossip? What's going on? Can't see anything from back here. So.
No, Lewis was completely gone. He was not in the conversation. He was just frustrated in the race. I mean, I guess his point of contention was that his radio engineer people told him to pit earlier than he wanted to. Because I guess he had, like, a more long-term strategy, and they wanted him to pit, and he was just, like, after that, he was just, like, you guys don't know what you're doing. He had a really bad attitude.
So he, in his post-race interview, they asked him if he took any lessons away from today, and he was, like, for me personally, no. And then he's, like, and then they were, like, well, what about the team? And he's, like, for the team, absolutely. And it's like,
Lewis, who says that?
No, like, look at Charles. Charles's issue was clearly because of the team. Did he ever say that? No. He was like, this is on me. I crashed the car. We don't know what the issue is. Like, as a team, we're gonna have to, like, recuperate and see what's up. Like, he was so diplomatic. Lewis is only diplomatic when he's winning.
Yeah.
Clearly.
Like, imagine being interviewed in any context, being like, did you learn anything? No. Nope.
I'm, like, perfect. Without me, like, if it was pompous. Up to me, I would have won. I know, it's ridiculous. And he literally ended with, like, mm-hmm. And then, like, walked
away. What a diva.
I know, it really frustrated me. It really showed me a new side to him, where he has, like, this gentle soul, like, behind his eyes, and he's always so sweet and kind and builds people up until he's losing.
Right.
Like, you have to do well in defeat as well, i.e. Charles, who is currently my model for anything and everything on this planet.
Vettel, very impressively, finished in P5 and won driver of the day.
Yes, well deserved.
Mm-hmm. I love to see a good news story for Aston Martin as well.
Yeah, maybe it was a Serena, like, winning.
Right. Serena was the guest of Aston Martin. Yeah. I don't know why.
No one knows why. I guess she hangs out with Lawrence on her off days.
Yeah.
Can you? I don't think she hangs out with Lawrence ever.
No, I don't think they have anything in common because no. Lawrence certainly doesn't play tennis.
And I don't think Serena wears Michael Kors.
No. Well, actually, she wore an awful plaid skirt today.
It was even bad for I don't think even Michael Kors would make that skirt. I don't know what she was wearing. She could have done way
brown,
better.
It was brown plaid, you guys.
Yeah.
Brown plaid.
Also, she looked like she was about to freeze her balls off. Like, that was incorrect in every way. And I think Serena usually dresses quite well. So I don't know what she was. Yeah. Maybe she didn't know she was going to fly the checkered flag and thought she'd be like hiding in the box. And then all of a sudden, she was dragged into the spotlight.
It's just, but like we were saying though, like how Monaco is supposed to be the most glam Grand Prix of them all. How do you show up to Monaco in brown plaid?
Not even like fancy brown plaid. It was like wool.
It was like Talbots.
Yes, that's what it looked. Yes, it looked like Talbots. That was good.
You cannot even. How did they let her leave the Monaco airport?
How did they let her in? They should have just like turned it around.
Okay. Okay. So Max won the Monaco Grand Prix. And like we said, Lewis finished 7th. And so for the World Constructor standings, it makes it extremely close. Max is now leading with 105 points. Lewis has 101. And then Lando has 56. And Bottas has 47. And then team-wise, Red Bull has 149. And Mercedes has 148.
And it's also the first time Red Bull is leading the constructors in years. Since Vettel, I think. Vettel left them. So good for... And there's a photo of Christian hugging Max. And the look on his face... Like, we were discussing who loves who more. Does Zach love Lando more? Or does Christian love Max more? And I think they're very different kinds of love.
Mm-hmm.
I think Zach loves Lando in a very unconditional way. Winning or losing, I love you. As, like, a son.
Yeah.
I think Christian loves Max for what he can do for Christian.
Yes.
Because there was a lot, like, the look in his eyes was not an unconditional kind of
It was look. Like money signs in his eyes.
Yes, if it was a cartoon, they'd be popping out.
Exactly. But during the race, because Max had, like, a pretty commanding lead, and so the commentators were saying, is Christian going to jump naked but a cape into the swimming pool again? So, of course, I had to Google what they were talking about. And in 2006, for the Monaco Grand Prix, Christian made a bet with one of those commentators that if they podiumed, he would jump into a pool naked. And Red Bull did make podium. So Christian was about to jump into a pool naked. But fortunately, at that time, Red Bull was promoting Superman Returns. Isn't it, like, not okay to just jump into a pool naked in public?
I mean, I think also one of the issues was that I don't think he was ever planning on following through, but the commentator announced it on, like, global radio that this right. was going to happen.
So because of the Superman promo, he was allowed to wear a red cape. And so if you just Google Christian Horner red cape naked, you will see him wrapped in a cape jumping into a pool.
I think there's two very important things to note here. One, why the hell is he wearing it like a reverse halter neck dress? Like, I don't understand why he's put it on like that. And second is that facial hair is vital for Christian Horner as a human being.
Right. He looks like a, I don't know. He looks like Peter a giant Pettigrew. Baby. Yeah.
Yes, he does look like a giant baby. Not a good look. Thank God he's not naked, though.
Yes, thank God. So, okay, the race ended, and Serena Williams was given the task to wave the checkered flag for the winners, or just everyone who finished the race, and she held the flag like a tennis racket, and super with a super stiff grip, and she was waving it around like she was like trying. I don't even know the analogy. Like, she was trying to swat a fly.
But also, I don't think she registered that she had to do it for all 20 dry or 18, I guess, because yeah. she kept stopping and the guy behind her kept poking her like, there's another one. Lady, we're not done.
She didn't look interested in that job at all. But anyway, so that was awkward. And then after the race, you know, they were interviewing all the podium and like top race finishers, and they were interviewing Max, the winner of the Grand Prix. And the interviewer just cuts his interview and pans to Serena, and it's like, because she's just on the side talking to someone else entirely, like just having a normal conversation. And he goes, "Hey, Serena, would love to bring you into this interview." And she goes, "Oh, okay." And he's like, "What'd you think of today's race?" And she goes, "It was such an amazing Grand Prix."
I really think, like, she just misspoke. I don't think she
Yeah, I mean, to her, yeah, like, she was totally taken off guard, but I was just like, it's a Grand Prix that you're at and waving the checkered flag for. The interviewer goes, "Do you have any advice to Max on how he could improve on his performance?"
Both of their faces were like, "What?"
Like, "Sir, he just won the Monaco Grand Prix."
Yes, like, Serena was like, no.
I don't have any advice to give to Max. So this interviewer made for a very cringeworthy situation, which every great Grand Prix has a cringeworthy interview. So,
and I would just like to say that we think Serena Williams is an incredible athlete and an amazing person and normally dresses very well. I just don't think that her advice to Max Verstappen is completely necessary.
No, yeah. Well, she said it herself. She said, yeah, "I don't have any advice because this isn't my arena."
Yes, like, and also he just won, so clearly he doesn't need my advice.
Right. So, also another post-race interview was Lando talking about his experience, and then in the middle of his interview, Carlos walked over and was kind of just like joking around, like cutting into his interview, and Lando's like, "Oh man, this guy's stealing my glory again," but it was very like brotherly and adorable.
Yes, it was very sweet to watch. We love Carlos and Lando. We're so happy they got to podium together.
Yes. I was really happy with the, like, even though it was a complete shit show, I was glad that Max was able to take the lead in the constructor standing. So it's, like, very, you know, competitive for Lewis, because until now, he was just leading. Yeah. And then I was happy to see Carlos, on behalf of Ferrari, get some redemption for the whole Charles debacle. And then Lando fully deserved to podium because he was in amazing golf livery today.
Yes, that was great to see. And it was really fun to see three different team like colors up there. Yeah. You don't see that a lot. I also would like to say that Charles stuck around the entire race and then went out with the entire team to, like, where, you know, where the driver jumps on their teams. He came out with them and they hugged. Him and Carlos hugged. And I wanted to cry.
Yeah. I mean, he's such a great team player.
And he there was a lot of cute little clips of all the drivers coming up to him to, like, hug him at the beginning of the race and, like, be like, "It's okay, man."
Yeah.
He's just such a sweet little guy.
Everyone felt bad for him because it truly wasn't his fault.
No, and it's, he looks Mattia's. So sad. His eyes are just, like, the worst thing I've ever seen.
Yes, they're like puppy dog eyes.
Yeah. They're just so sweet and innocent. Fuck Mattia. Oh
yes, he's an idiot.
I don't know where he went to engineering school, but I'm gonna be writing them a strongly worded email.
The Ronald McDonald Institute of Engineering.
They look like clowns and they act like clowns.
It's just like, why is he even trying to say anything right now?
No, just shut up. Yes. Oh, it had nothing to do with this giant ass crash that happened yesterday.
Like, okay, sir, you don't know shit about shit.
No, but we do. Ferrari.
We do. We know everything.
We would have caught that gearbox issue.
We really would have. Okay, so in 2 weeks, we're going to Baku in Azerbaijan.
Another City track where Lewis says Red Bull will obviously dominate, but we all know that trick by now, so whatever. I hope Red Bull does dominate.
Me too. I want Max to win again.
Me too. I want Charles to win.
Not win,
but at least podium, because he deserves it after this
week. Yeah, Charles needs some sort of redemption arc this season.
Yes, we love Charles.
We do.
Not a big fan of Lewis right now.
No, he's just annoying me with his attitude this weekend, as well as his refrigerator advertisement on Instagram.
He literally went, you know how easy it is to be vegan when you have this refrigerator?
He's like, it helps the planet when you look inside your refrigerator.
Just, I think maybe if he ate some cheese, he would have had a better attitude today.
Yes. He desperately needs animal products.
Yes. Or a spicy tuna roll. That always gets
me going. Oh, yes. Yes. Yeah.
We have a list of things for your attitude, Lewis. And for your fridge. I'd much rather look in and see a spicy tuna roll than a broccoli.
Just imagine looking inside your fridge and it's just legumes and vegetables. I would be depressed as well.
Sad, sad. Well, hopefully you eat something other than legumes by Baku. I don't know why I've started saying Baku.
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 Alrighty.
Box, box.
Box, box.